JC2S, Part 2.
Number 6A.
So what we see in that chapter of Christian Science versus Spiritualism, which is such a cornerstone for the text, but which is skipped over by superficial reading by many, that it is absolutely... It's so big. I hope I'm getting the bigness by, because you see, that's where the world is. The world is going to spiritualism for its answers. It calls it a new age, but it's an old age revisited. It's just going to these minds, many spirits, many souls, many personalities, many, the cycle of birth, maturity, and death, mortal consciousness, plans for information. And they call it new, and it isn't. It's old spiritualism, and the fundamental Christians, in a way, are right, that just say, well, it's Satan at work, this new age. Well, in a way, that concept of spiritualism that is in work within the new age movement, that tries to attach itself to the new age movement, is really something that is a big problem. It's, as you see, it's already been posed as the problem of being. So if we can just realize that that is what's going on, that it's a belief that anything in our life can be turned into its opposite. Now, animal magnetism unmasked comes along and says, now if we reason from this belief that it has really catastrophic effects on our perception of reality, therefore, if we see that there's only one universe, and therefore that universe can be understood, we see it as a science of spirit now, as the ideational universe, or it can be misunderstood, as the second record of creation does it. If it is misunderstood, it becomes a hypnotic suggestion. We see already in the coupling of the first and second records of creation, and also hold on to this one too, that you see that right there, this, they already tell us it's hypnotism, deep sleep, animal magnetism. That's what happened at the fourth point in the second record of creation, that a deep sleep fell upon Adam. He was in a hypnotic trance. And a rib was taken from Adam, and Eve was made from that rib. That's just a story. It's a story that is not a real story, but it's a story of the imagination. But it's a story. Deep sleep stood, as Max showed us when he went through the Genesis chapter in the first and second record of creation. The deep sleep just stands for a hypnotic state of hypnotism. So as we move now, leaving just the transparencies as they are and moving on to the fifth chapter in our consciousness, we see then that this is that of the Christ is the Word. It's that whole chapter of animal magnetism unmasked. It's that chapter where the belief that any other power is going on besides God, that is unmasked within our consciousness. And you see that, therefore, it wants to show that there isn't any other power going on. There's only the power of God good going on. But that if we believe that there's another power going on, that's going on only within the realm of a hypnotic suggestion, within the realm of imagination. You know how in that book on animal magnetism unmasked, Max pointed out how they investigated the phenomenon of animal magnetism, and they just came up saying, well, it just goes on within the imagination. Well, that's true. This belief of the second record of creation is a belief which we see what we believe, and we believe what we see, and it just goes on within the imagination. It isn't something that is going on within reality. And it is nothing more than a hypnotic suggestion. That's what that talking, lying serpent is showing to us in the second record of creation, that it comes as a talking, lying suggestion. And what did Eve do? She took it in. First, the serpent began to beguile her. But then she suddenly, and he says, oh, the serpent says, God told you not to eat of the tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil? That's silly. God knows that if you do, your eyes will be open and you'll have power as God. And so Eve took in the suggestion and said, and then the Bible says, she saw, oh, that it was good to eat, and it was to make her wise. So she immediately took in the suggestion. As she took in the suggestion from the serpent, she was hypnotized. She then presented this whole subject of duality to Adam, and he took it in. So we see then that Eve, and then when they were in the state of hypnotism, Adam says, well, it's the woman who you gave to me. It's her fault and your fault. You gave her to me, and she made me eat of this concept of duality. But the woman impersonalized it all and said, well, it has nothing to do with person, place, or thing, but as Mrs. Eddy said, sin sins the sinner. That it's just these impersonal beliefs that come and present themselves to consciousness from the unconscious, the universal unconscious or the subconscious realm that talk in our ear. We don't have to take everything in. But when we take it in, it hypnotizes us to be on that belief. We get caught up into that realm. We know hypnotism. We know that if somebody says that under a hypnotic trance there's a little kitty in the room, well, then we pet it, and there's no little kitty, but we pet it, and we pick it up, and we play with it, and everybody thinks, what in the world? You would see nothing, and I would play, and I'd go get milk, and I'd feed it, and I'd honestly believe it was there. But you looking at me would think, well, she's gone off now, because there's no kitty there. But if the suggestion came to me that there was, I would think so, and I would experience it. This is how Mrs. Eddy says that, how she said that there was a bed where they told somebody that there was a patient that had cholera, and there was no patient in the bed that ever had cholera, but they told this person that somebody died from cholera in the bed. Well, that person took on all the symptoms of cholera and died. They took in the suggestion. And that's what we do. We take it in. And the minute we take in the second record of creation, we're hypnotized into that standpoint. And our perception only goes out from that standpoint. And we ask all our questions. Where did evil come from? Why was I born in matter? Why do I live in matter? Why does my body ache in matter? Why am I getting decrepit and old in matter? Well, I can hardly wait till I die out of matter. And Mrs. Eddy says in this chapter, the sixth chapter, but we must teach people that not everyone must die. She said, we must teach mortals that all must not die. That's fatalism. Live, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That's not Christian Science. And students come along and say, well, it's all right. It's principles planned for me, for so-and-so to go, so the dear thing left. It's not Christian Science. Christian Science is to teach mortals that all must not die. It's not to give in to death, that there's nothing real than death and taxes. That's fatalism. Jesus came and destroyed death. And we should too. That's why the textbook says right on the cover, raise the dead, heal the sick. We give in to these suggestions and we call it Christian Science, and it's nothing but spiritualism. And we do it all the time. I do too. We all do. But more and more I'm seeing, who's telling me these things? Do we have to believe that death is a reality? Do we have to all die? Well, Jesus said no. He said that life is in and of spirit, and life is in and of spirit here and now, and that, behold, the field is ripe with harvest. Mrs. Eddy proved it, too, when near Death Valley. She saw that we weren't born in that material calculus. We were born of spirit, born of God. And therefore, that is what we should be demonstrating. We take on too low of a responsibility in Christian Science. Jesus is the way sure. He was the way he walked on water. Already in the first class last week, we saw that's a possibility. Now, should we be kicked out of the Kepler Institute because we walk around saying that we can walk on water? No. Already, it's only the first subject of mind, that all power and force is in the divine mind. We tread on forces. And at the principle of mind tone in the sixth chapter, we saw that Jesus saw that the law of gravity was a law of matter. The law of gravity was not a law of matter, that it was a law of mind. and that we tread on mind forces, divine mind forces. And because he knew we tread on mind forces, and because as the compendium teaches us that all spiritual attraction, adhesion, and cohesions are forces of mind, he walked on the water. Those forces were working for him, not against him. So you see, we take on not the a standard of the Christ. That's why, as Max has said, that if Jesus was here, would we really follow him? We go through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Say, isn't this wonderful? What a wonderful life story. Jesus was wonderful. The man was great. Isn't he terrific? Oh, look what he did. And we just can't quite feel that this is something we can do also. But this is what the textbook is for. It gives us a bigger life purpose than we would ever give to ourselves. And the Christ does that. So it gets to be that many are called or few are chosen. Do we choose ourselves to really be the Son of God? And all that it implies and all that power that goes on within that realm of the third degree that the Christ is taking us to in that chapter of the Christ is the Christ. Showing that it takes us from the first degree of the physical through the mental into a spiritual explanation where we go into a new paradigm with new phenomena, new experiences. And we don't want to make something big small. We don't want to make what we are big into, oh, I'm just this so-and-so. I was just born in such and such a city. In the United. Isn't that what they said about Jesus? You're just a carpenter's son. You can't do these things. He knew he was more than a carpenter's son. He was the Son of God. And being the Son of God, he could walk on the water. Being a carpenter's son, he never could. So it's just a question, do we believe in spiritualism? Do we believe that our bigness of our identity has been turned into something little by mortal consciousness? And that's the question. It's much bigger than just reading, as Max says, black on white. The subject of Christian Science is radical. That's why she says that it's revolutionary. It puts us into a whole new paradigm. And in another paradigm, we get another science and another demonstration than the paradigm of the mental, which just says, well, the mental can be good and evil. Well, the paradigm of the mental is going to become pretty extraordinary pretty soon when they start using psychic phenomena in the name of good and evil. In the name of psychic warfare, Mrs. Eddy says that mental realm can be hell let loose. We know for years they've been researching psychic warfare and the power of the mind to destroy. And that the power of the mind to create mental assassination. And maybe we aren't so safe if we close our doors at night as we do in the physical realm, that in the mental realm there is that possibility of thoughts coming to kill. And it's possible that if not controlled through science, crime can become, she said, hell let loose. So already the mental realm will have extraordinary phenomena occurring if not controlled by science, as I said. And the physical realm, well, we know that. So the extraordinary abilities within the spiritual realm are not miracles. And that's what this chapter wants to show. They're natural. And we know that how Mrs. Eddy kept saying over and over and over in this chapter, in the first part of it, through mind, spirit, soul, and especially in the spirit tone. Christian Science is natural. The standpoint of the spiritual should be natural. Anything else is not natural. Otherwise, we haven't learned the lessons of the fourth chapter. Our bigness has been turned into littleness. So you see that we have quite a responsibility, I see. It's only that in the last few years when I stopped giving classes and conferences around the country, been going out, and I think in 87 gave 14 classes and conferences away from home about 6 months out of the year, not consecutively, but at different times. I felt to give birth to this chapter, I wanted to go home and be quiet and really see the bigness of it. And I had to do that for the last 2 years. And well, it just made revolutions within my consciousness. First of all, I wanted to let the Christ change my character and nature so I would be worthy to present the chapter, which was my first desire. And then the next one, it just started doing revolutions. I saw that it was way, way beyond what I ever thought that it was presenting to us. It is big stuff. And that's why last year I came and said that and quoted Mrs. Eddy, where she said, Christian Science is revolutionary. Go to the scaffold if you must, but take not back the words of truth. It is so different that they could bring persecution for what it's saying, but we have to stick to it and realize that it is natural and possible and not miracles, but something of the standpoint of God. So I think we know, and I'm not saying this to you, I'm saying it with you, together we're saying, together, that we are beginning to realize that Christian Science makes bigger demands in the spiritual realm that we ever realize, and that we're beginning through now the textbook, through science and understanding, to come to great heights. This is the highest subject can ever be taught in the world, and it demands the highest demonstration from us, the highest understanding and the highest demonstration. So it is our fidelity to this textbook that is going to demand all this. That's why we get few in classes, don't we? Because the few that can't take the shift, especially from the mental into the spiritual, especially from the human into the spiritual, just will not follow any longer. And the purification process will go on, but that's wonderful. Because even if science purifies, Mrs. Eddy says, it's not that we want fewer, more, we want less. We want the few, we want the platoons who really are willing to go for it. And not care what it takes away as an unuseful surroundings. Mrs. Eddy says in Scientific Obstetrics, it will never injure our useful surroundings in the travail of spiritual birth, but it will always remove from us whatever is offensive. So before obstetrics, we know so well how she says, are our thoughts human and divine? Why do we want the spiritual? Just to have our lives better, to have better human lives? Or do we really want to go for the spiritual? And that isn't easy. It isn't easy for me. I mean, it's tremendous struggles I've had over the last 2 years to say, do I really want to go for the spiritual? That is really asking a lot. That's demanding a lot, even after a whole life, as we have all had in Christian Science. And then within the science of Christian Science, I may have come in about 1962, 63. We're getting into 20 years or something. You know, then one still says, are we willing to go for it? Huh? As Max says, are we always willing to be a pioneer, to make those new mutations? Well, when you start seeing these demands, you wonder about yourself. Can I do it? Do I want to do it? Do I want to let the Christ take me away from those bonds of the human into a more higher spiritual awareness of myself, step by step, of course, gradually, never through anything radical, because that's why the first three chapters are there, to allow the Christ to take us from prayer to atonement Eucharist, to a higher marriage, to better relationships, to better families, to better children and all that. That's wonderful. That's good. We must do that. But there comes a time where in that chapter says, does man create man or does God create man? And in the fourth chapter, she says, God creates man. And therefore, that is the new birth, that consciousness sees that we come out from the Father and we're never born in matter. We don't live in it and we aren't experiencing in it. So we see here at this Animal Magnetism Unmasked chapter that comes before the sixth chapter, that if we have taken in the suggestions of the second record of creation, we're in a hypnotic trance. And everything we ask in that is just like, it's a paradigm that asks wrong questions. It's just like during the paradigm when the earth was flat, and they would say, well, why is the earth flat? Well, Columbus says it isn't flat. And they say, well, why is it flat? Well, it isn't flat. So we ask all these questions within the paradigm of, as I said, why does the body ache? Why is there sin? Why is there Gaddafis in the world? Why is there terrorism? Why are they blowing it up? Well, they're not. It's only going on within the illusion, within the cycle of an illusion that just feeds upon itself and feeds upon itself and recycles itself in the state of the Eastern world says samsara, the wheel of samsara, just birth and death and birth and death and birth and death within this realm. But we get out of it by letting science break that hypnotic spell, by reasoning correctly. It does break the spell. Mrs. Eddy says it breaks Earth's stupid rest. And she says, anyhow, this stupid rest is too ridiculous to last. She says, it's not going to last. The world is too bright. It's going to catch on. And she said the year 2100 would be the end of this belief in the second record of creation. So we can see then that we are coming out of something quite extraordinary, which is really mass hypnosis. on a general scale. And a few spiritual thinkers have come out of this hypnotic trance. Jesus was out of it. The prophets were out of it. Mrs. Eddy got out of it. Dorley, Max, all through these work step by step, discovering who they are through the textbook is enabling us to come out of the illusion. Now, just show that picture of that. Yeah. You see that it's interesting that it shows that if we go out, it alters our perception. We see that there's only one universe, which is spiritual. But at the point of the first and second record of creation, the point, it's according to which record of creation we go out from is how we perceive the universe. If we go out from the first record of creation, we perceive the spiritual universe. If we go out from the second record of creation, we get caught in the cycle of hypnotism and we perceive it according to that standpoint. So here we have that famous drawing, which shows it's just a question of perception, how we see this drawing. For the tape audience, I just have on the screen then, and for us too, a figure. And if we look at that figure one way, we see a young girl. But if we look at that figure in another way, we see an old woman. Can you see? All right, I'm going to just turn off the video and the audio so we can help you see it. So for the tape audience, we stopped a bit so I could show it to the class, but generally what's on the screen is a one figure, and if one looks at it in one way, one sees a young girl looking over her shoulder, but the same figure seen another way, that it looks like an old woman. So within the same figure, we can either perceive a young girl and or an old woman. That's then, we can just, is what goes on then really within being. If we look at being from the standpoint of the first record of creation, we see the universe as God created it. As Mrs. Eddy says in the scientific statement of being, there is no life, truth, intelligence nor substance in the matter concept, in duality, in spiritualism, in the belief that something can be turned into its opposite. And then she says, all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. So therefore, in reality, all there is going on is a spiritual universe. If all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, then that's all that's going on. But as Paul says, that if we look at that universe from the second record of creation, we put on dark glasses that distorts our vision of the real universe. So we see a universe that is inverted and turned upside down. That's what it does. If we go outside the focal point of spirit, everything is turned upside down. That's why the sixth chapter has to come along and put everything back again. Through the crisis, the Christ comes to us and retranslates out of us this false perception, this false hypnotic trance. The Christ just takes us out of it, out of that hypnotism, breaks us out of it, usually through suffering, usually having to whack the donkey between the ears, to get our attention. We're not too smart. Too often are we, all of us, to go forward through science, so we would love to. It's usually the whack between the ears that makes us, the suffering experience gets our attention always. But it's just the Christ coming to get our attention, to take us out of this illusion, out of this hypnotic trance, which is just seeing what we believe and believing what we see, staying within that realm of the illusion. So that's what Animal Magnetism Unmasked chapter does. It's Animal Magnetism Unmasked. She unmasked that belief that anything else is going on besides God. And by giving us those laws that handle animal magnetism or hypnotism, she breaks us out of that realm of illusion. And so this is why whenever in practice we're faced with such fundamental problems, when I feel that people are just suffering tremendously under this illusion of the second record of creation, one always recommends those laws that handle animal magnetism, beginning especially on page 140 in the Animal Magnetism Unmasked book, because they do handle that belief that anything is going on besides God, and that we have given power. That's the point of animal magnetism, that we have given power to that realm, to operate for good and evil.